This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It's Reporters Roundtable Thursday. That's when we have a chance to talk with reporters of Northwest Indiana Media to find out more about the stories they've put out in print and online. And to begin the program today, we have a former Post Tribune reporter Amy LaValle with us. And Amy, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you.
We've got some great stories here from Porter County to bring up that you've had out there. Let's begin with the one about problems at Porter Beach and what the Indiana Dune Superintendent has to say about that.
Well, basically what happened is they were getting very large crowds of mostly underage drinkers, a lot of them from out of state, who were parking at the skate park and walking, because it's not far.
Yeah.
And they were rowdy. They were fighting. It's not a family environment, as Paul Labovitz, the superintendent. They want a family environment at the beach, like most people do. And so he has the power, as superintendent of the national park, to say, no alcohol at this beach from now until basically Labor Day weekend. He can lift that at any time. It's up to him. He wanted to be proactive. He now has an arrangement with the Porter County Sheriff's Department. Nobody was arrested a few weeks ago when all this happened, but he now has an arrangement with the Porter County Sheriff's Department so that if you are a 19-year-old from Illinois who comes to our beach to get drunk, you'll go to jail. You'll get in trouble. So not that those folks didn't get in trouble, but there's kind of a crackdown mechanism that's been put in place. Last year, as we all know, when Chicago beaches were closed with the pandemic, but our beaches were open, I mean, there's always lots of people from Chicago and Illinois who come to our beaches, but it was insane. And I went out there a number of times to do stories. You got there on a Wednesday in late June, and by the time a photographer and I left at 11:30, which was half an hour after the lifeguard got on the stand at the state park, the line down 49, Indiana 49, stretched for like a mile and a half.
Oh, my gosh.
It was insane.
Yeah.
And so they started doing some additional enforcement at both the state and national beaches, park beaches, because of that. And I think that Paul's Superintendent Labovitz doesn't want this to be a problem all year again. So we'll see. Hopefully this will help. It gets the message across. You know, like he said, we welcome people from all over to our beaches. You have to follow the rules. I think it'll help, too, that the Chicago beaches are open again. People have been out a little bit more. We haven't all been, you know, entombed in our homes, you know, because restrictions are being lifted, vaccines, et cetera. So hopefully that will help alleviate some situation anyway.
Well, maybe it's something, too, that I just thought about, that maybe that Indiana Dunes Tourism Executive Director Lorelei Weimer ought to bring up with her staff and maybe ought to slip some information in on the website, because we know a lot of people check out the website to find out what's happening in the region when it's tourism, and it's something they should know about if they don't already know.
Good idea.
One of the other stories that you have out there in print and online, too, dealing with another Porter County problem is, of course, dealing with the pandemic. Everybody's recovering from the pandemic, reopening, as we've just mentioned here. And Porter County Health Department is going to get some added help, I guess, to try to inform people about it. Tell us about that story.
As everybody knows, certainly by last April, 14 months ago, the county started putting together, as many health departments did, as state was, a dashboard that was a record of the number of people who had taken ill, the number of people who had died, the number of people who had been hospitalized. And Porter County's dashboard, as many are, was very specific because it included how many cases there were in each township. So you could click on the map, or you still can, it's still there, and find out, oh, I live in Center Township, where Valparaiso is,
right.
We have this number of people who are ill, this many people have died, this whatever. Well, somebody had to input all that information, and that was Crit Ellis, the assistant to the Board of Commissioners. And, you know, in the days when the cases were extremely high, and I know this just, it would take a huge chunk of time, because for every person who was sick, there was an address, and then you have to figure out which township does that person live in, so you can put them in the chart properly. so that, you know, all the numbers work out, et cetera. And it was a huge amount of time. Now, I guess the, you know, at the same time, some of the other county responsibilities for that office, such as maintaining social media, for example, for the Expo Center, the Opera House, those were all closed
during
the pandemic. Well, now it's still a huge job, and there's more, you know, I think the health department officials have realized they need a central person, even after the pandemic is over, and we're hopefully nearing that, to put out news releases about things that are going on, to keep the public informed beyond, you know, putting information in this graphic. And also, as county facilities reopen, Memorial Opera House has a show in the coming weeks. The Expo Center is again hosting events. You know, that takes time that Kurt Ellis has to put into those things as well. So over time, some of those duties of, like, the dashboard have been shifted directly to the health department. And now they're looking for someone to do that, but also handle some of their other things. You know, maybe there's, I'm going on a limb here, but a change in the vaccine clinics for back to school or those kinds of things. Or, say, the health department is called, I know, I think it was a year or two ago, there was an issue in the Chesterton schools with people getting sick, and they thought there was something in the water. You know, something to do those kinds of duties where you're putting out the announcements. And it makes sense. It's up to 29 hours a week, which is the maximum you can have without paying benefits,
right,
at $25 an hour. So it's really good money, but it's also a lot of responsibility. There was talk initially, should this be full-time from the get-go? And the county health department officials were like, possibly, we didn't think you'd approve of a full-time position straight out. Let's start part-time with these parameters and see how it goes. And if it turns out that there is more than enough to do to make it full-time, they can discuss that. Budget hearings for 2022 start in the fall under the Porter County Council's budget process. So they can discuss that in, you know, September, and then really, you know, get the funds ready starting in January to make that position full-time. It makes sense.
Well, yeah,
it really does.
Yeah, it sounds like that it's something that the Porter County Commissioners and the County Council ought to do. They ought to take baby steps, I guess you could call them, in starting the job as a part-time. And certainly Kurt Ellis would not object to having somebody helping him out on occasion when there's something very, very busy that he's going to be facing and still have to keep track of the pandemic with all the other things that are still going on.
Correct.
One of the other stories that you have out there in print and online in Post Tribune recently, Amy talks about some other issues with the community of Chesterton. The interim police chief had to step down. Will you tell us more about that?
At the start of this year, the police chief took a job as the town administrator.
Mm-hmm.
So they, on an interim basis, Nick Brown, who was, I believe, a corporal with the department, was named interim police chief until they could find a full-time person. Well, by mid-February, I think it was, mid-February, town officials were made aware of an alleged incident involving Brown. But they've said it was believed to have taken place a number of years ago and was out of state. That was according to town officials. So the police commission and the town council met in an executive session to learn more about something going on, alleging misconduct. And following that, Nicholas Brown stepped down as interim chief and returned to his previous rank with the department. They brought in Robert Byrd, who'd formerly been with NICD, among other places, to be the new interim chief. He's still there now. Police Commission selected a former Chesterton police chief, George Nelson, to conduct an internal investigation into the allegations. And ultimately, a couple weeks ago, Corporal Brown submitted his resignation from the department. And town officials and the town attorney would not say whether their internal investigation, if that concluded it. I mean, it's difficult to investigate someone who's no longer being, you know, being paid by the town.
Yeah.
I think his last day is June 28th, I believe. It's not fully clear what exactly happened. I haven't been able to get anything on the record that I could discuss. So there's a little bit of question about what might have happened. We'll never publicly know at this juncture. But they're moving on. I believe that this coming Monday, the police commission was going to hold an executive session to do some interviews. So, you know, they're actively pursuing finding a new police chief. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, it may be a matter that is just probably left alone and just move ahead,
yes.
Which is apparently the
way
way the town officials in Chesterton are looking at it and would like to probably take it to be sure. We mentioned at the beginning of our conversation that we were talking with a former Post-Tribune reporter, Amy LaValle, and that's because she is moving on to taking on an even bigger challenge, which I guess in a way kind of goes back to a conversation we had earlier this week on Regionally Speaking with the new owner and publisher of the Chesterton Tribune, Don Hurd. We understand, Amy, that you are taking the job as the editor of the Tribune. And congratulations, first off. And tell us, if you will, about what interested you in making the switch from the daily paper.
Well, thank you very much. It was one of those things that happened very quickly, and I found out about it, and suddenly here we are. I start next Wednesday as editor of the Chesterton Tribune, which comes out, as I'm sure Mr. Hurd mentioned, on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I am committed to local journalism, and I have been, particularly small towns or smaller towns, for much of my career. And for an assortment of reasons, I was interested in making a change, and this appealed to me. It's everything that I've been doing. I'll still be writing. I'll get to work with other writers and help them do what they do best and help shape this newly rejuvenated newspaper, which is very exciting. Obviously, I already have a lot of contacts in Porter County, so I'm not starting from the ground up there. And it was just a terrific opportunity to move along but still do what I've been doing at a different level.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like from the conversation that I had with Mr. Hurd earlier, and his thoughts very much follow what he has put together for all of his community papers that he owns throughout northern Indiana, which include now the Chesterton Tribune, as they've had also included the Lowell Tribune, since that's one of his co-owned papers. Looking forward to the move over to the Tribune, another Tribune, I guess, not the Post-Tribune, but the Chesterton Tribune. Yeah. That's not lost. To see the similarity in names there, to be sure, but we know for sure that it's an opportunity, like you say, to put all the experience and the contacts that you've developed over the years to work in Chesterton, and we wish you the best, and we certainly hope that we have an opportunity here on Regionally Speaking on Reporters Roundtable Thursdays to be able to talk with you about the stories that will be coming out in print in the Chesterton Tribune. And thank you for spending time with us today to talk a little bit about what you're doing in your future that's ahead. Moving over from the Post-Tribune to the Chesterton Tribune.
Thank you.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It's Reporters Roundtable Thursday, which means we talk with Northwest Indiana news media members to find out about stories in print and online. And we have now Carrie Napoligan, who's reporter for the Post-Tribune, to tell us about her stories. Thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, there's an end of the history in public education in Hammond coming up here, as one school that has been open for youngsters for 89 years is closing, and there's also been some important things to come about in some of the commencements. Tell us about your story that's out there in print and online.
Well, today is their final graduating class of seniors, and their valedictorian for this class will be the first and last African-American student at Clark High School to earn that honor.
Wow. Tell us about Derek Woods. He sounds like a very, very fine young man who's worked his way through school and to this very good honor, and he's got quite a bit on his shoulders now, knowing that he's the first and the last valedictorian there at Clark High School.
Yes, Derek, I had the chance to meet him last week and talk with him. He's a wonderful young man. He has been involved in pretty much every aspect of the school. He is a four-sport athlete, although in his senior year he didn't play basketball, but over his course of his high school he played baseball, basketball, ran cross-country, and also participated in the swimming team.
Mm-hmm.
He has a 4.4 approximately grade point average. He's president of the National Honor Society. He is very involved in volunteerism and school support. He's just a great, well-rounded young man.
And he's got plans for the future that far surpass what the average person would want.
Yes, yes. He is going to study pre-med at Northwestern. Derek earned himself a full scholarship
Wow.
to attend the university. Yeah, isn't that amazing? And he is going to study neurology. He wants to be a neuroscientist and come back and, or actually a neurologist and come back and work here in Northwest Indiana.
That's great to hear. I'm sure that the fact that this is the very final commencement for Clark High School is not lost not only on students who are graduating in this final class this year, but also the teachers and the other staff members at the high school. Tell us a little bit first about the history of Clark High School that you've learned in putting your story together, and had a chance to talk with a number of people who remember what's happened to a point, but they're looking now to what's going to happen with the school city of Hammond in the future.
Well, Clark is one of those schools that just really evolved over the years. It started in 1932 as a kindergarten through 12th grade school. And then as, you know, the community grew, it's located right in the heart of Robertsdale there. And as the community grew, eventually the younger kids were sent off to Franklin Elementary, and it became a middle high school. And that happened in around 1975. And they've gone through a number of renovations and expansions, but they're just kind of, now, they can't do much more where they have. It's a really beautiful building.
Mm-hmm.
But this new high school, Hammond Central High School, will take these kids and kids from Gavitt and Hammond High School and put them all under one roof in a state-of-the-art building.
And I understand that not all the students at Gavitt are going to be going to the new school, but tell us what the situation is going to be there.
No, it looks like a portion of them, about 20% or so, will be going to the new school, and the remainder will be going over to Morton because they just couldn't make the new school
Yeah.
big enough.
Mm-hmm. What do some of the teachers there at the current Clark High School have to say about the end of an era there at the school and looking ahead to the future for them?
Well, it appears to be very bittersweet to all of them. Largely in part due to the fact that this past year was just so different because of COVID. You know, there weren't students in the halls every day. I spoke with Principal David Verda, and he will be the principal at the new high school, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I spoke with him, and they had all these events planned for the course of the year to really celebrate the school's history, and not much was able to take place at all. So this graduation is going to kind of be the big send-off. They're hoping to make it special, and that it's a way to say goodbye to the school like they wish they had been able to for the past year. Everybody I talked to described it as bittersweet. They're
mm-hmm.
excited about the new school, but, you know, it's a lot of history.
That's true.
It's a lot of history. 89 years is a long time.
That's true. Something to think about and reflect upon, to be sure. One of the other stories that you had out in print and online in Post Tribune here deals with more with property, in particular with the development here in Northwest Indiana. And it's about the reaction, I guess, of what's going to happen because of what state lawmakers did here during this past session, a new law about liquor licenses and what it may mean for development along Lake Michigan. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's a lot more than just the liquor licenses. This new law, it started out as H. Bill 1090. It was sponsored or created by Earl Harris Jr. And its ability for communities on the lakefront, Gary, but any community along Lake Michigan's lakefront there,
mm-hmm.
to create a lakefront development project. And prior to that, Whiting is a prime example. Whiting was the first community that this legislation was initially created for, you know, years back, and they used it to create their waterfront and their lakefront and the parks and the development around there. It really spurred economic development. But it always had a requirement in the legislation that to qualify for a lakefront development project, an oil refinery had to be located there.
Mm-hmm.
So this new legislation removes that requirement, and it also removes the local match. So a developer could come in with their own money, and the city doesn't have to put up any of its own funds to qualify for funding for this and to make the development a reality.
And I know that you mentioned there about the fact that, that liquor licenses, we talked about this at the start of this particular segment, that it meant some development was going to come to the city of Whiting. And I know that Mayor Spivar is getting to build on that because of what has happened in the past with their previous Mayor Joe Stahura's effort to get the liquor licenses in to bring more restaurants and similar businesses onto the lakefront. What does, I guess, everybody hope now will come about with this new measure that's going to increase things?
Well, you know, I think in Gary in particular, what they are hoping to see is the type of development that you saw occur in Whiting, and that is still happening. You know, you've got the waterfront park. It's a lot of entertainment-related development. And we're not talking on the sands of Lake Michigan. This is in the area around Lake Michigan. There's
right.
no intention to block the views or impede on the lakefront itself, but it gives that area around the lakefront, potentially the trail system, the opportunity for restaurants, for other type of retail development that would encourage tourism, that encourages people to come to the city. I mean, Whiting, like I said, is really a success story of how this legislation can work. And, you know, Gary is hoping to replicate there in their city. I think East Chicago also has some opportunities along the lakefront where they have some public land that they might be able to utilize for that purpose. So there are some options out there, and they're just hoping to make the lakefront and reclaim it really from the industry that has largely been the southern tip of Lake Michigan's heritage.
Yes.
So they're trying to make this a more people-friendly place.
We're talking with Carrie Napoleon with the Post Tribune about the story she's put out in print and online recently. Another story from Gary that you got a chance to cover was a part of the Gary Firefighters training program. Tell us about that.
Oh, that was a lot of fun. The firefighters, you know, obviously Gary is a very busy fire department. So the firefighters always look forward to the opportunity to participate in some kind of training. And this partnership the department has with the Gary Housing Authority really works to their benefit. The Housing Authority has a lot of vacant buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So they are able to go in, and they're not burning them for real, but they're using their smoke equipment to generate smoke. They're, you know, breaking out ceilings and windows and walls and conducting rescues to have that on-the-job feel and get practice. A lot of the fellows on the department right now are a little older, so they're retiring out, so you're getting a lot of young people coming in. And training is really important on all levels. It keeps the older fellows sharp, and it helps the newer fellows kind of come on board, and by fellows, men and women, it just helps them.
You got some good reaction, I just understand, too, that from the firefighters that were going through the training.
Oh, yeah. They, like I said, the firefighters themselves really enjoyed participating in that. They treated it like it was real. If you didn't know that they were doing it, you would have thought there was a fire there. They had the sirens, the lights, the trucks came. They ran the hose out. It was really fun to watch, and, you know, it was fun because you knew everybody was safe.
One of the other stories that you had out there, in addition, is one involving the Lake County Council, and I guess it's kind of a carryover from the way that the County Council had to conduct their business early on at the start of the pandemic, and they're following through, I guess, with virtual meetings. Will you tell us more about that, please?
Yes, and this is more than just the Lake County Council. This has to do with this last legislative session. When the pandemic first started, the governor's executive order allowed everybody to meet virtually. Now that things are winding down, while the executive order is good through June 30th and still allows everybody to meet virtually, now that it's winding down, if that executive order is lifted, these communities that want to continue some sort of electronic meeting need to get something in writing and need to have something passed as to the rules, and it has to meet the state minimum rules. Gary just passed theirs last Tuesday, and then Lake County did theirs this past Tuesday, so, you know, a week apart they did them. And their rules are similar, but they each have their own tweaks on it. So the city, the town, whatever the municipal or governing body is, they can adapt whatever they would like their plan to be, so long as it meets the state minimum requirement where they have to attend like one meeting a year or things mm-hmm. like that.
Do you get the impression that, that these governmental agencies and public agencies, in particular, with you're talking about county government or city government for that matter, that they have found that because of the changes they had to make during the pandemic in holding their meetings, they found some convenience in the way they're doing it virtually? Maybe not totally, but maybe they'll do some board meetings or things like that and then hold the big important public meetings in person.
I certainly think this will continue. I think there'll be a portion of a public meeting happening, at least on the county level. They are going to continue having their meetings in person, but this gives the council members the option, and the commissioners have a similar ordinance in place or resolution in place. It gives them the option to not attend. Mm-hmm. In person. I mean, they can attend virtually, they can vote virtually, they have to be able to be seen on the screen, and they have to be able to be heard. You know, they can't just put their name up on the screen, they have to have their faces there so the public can see them. And I think this is going to continue in some form. I think you'll see more people starting to go back to the regular meeting, but there is, you know, for some, especially, you know, in light of the pandemic, it does make it a little easier for people to gather and meet, and a little more efficient in some ways, especially now that after a year and a half, almost everybody kind of has a handle on Zoom and WebEx and all these other platforms. So it's starting to finally run fairly smoothly.
And I suppose as a reporter, you're finding it in some ways convenient to be able to watch a screen maybe from home or from a home office, of whatever it may happen to be, as opposed to having to go all the way down to City Hall or down to the county building and sit in the chairs like everybody else and go to a meeting as it was in the past.
You know, it has its pluses and minuses. Mm-hmm. You know, it is convenient to be able to – it's convenient and efficient to be able to go to a virtual meeting. You know, you don't have travel time. You know, it's much easier to take notes, at least for me, because I do it on my keyboard. So that is much easier. But in the same turn, you miss that opportunity really well. They do have questions at the end, and your ability to question, it's not the same as being able to question somebody in person and, you know, kind of grab who you need to get further information from after the meeting. So, you know, I miss that portion of public meetings. So it's a mix of whether this is good or bad. I am looking forward to public meetings returning a little more.
I can understand that, to be sure. Carrie Napoleon is a reporter for the Post Tribune. She's been with us to talk about the stories that she's had out in print and online here recently. And as always, Carrie, thanks for joining us on the program. Hope to have you back on soon.
Thank you very much.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. More people are making a bet on the future of Northwest Indiana. The $300 million Hard Rock Casino, Northern Indiana, is now open, but it's just the latest in a series of major projects fueling increased optimism in the region. Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick is joined by Northwest Indiana Forum CEO Heather Innes to get the details.
For decades, Northwest Indiana has been lagging when it comes to investment, jobs, and economic vitality. But there are signs that things are changing in the state's second largest regional economy. In 2020, as we look at Northwest Indiana by the numbers, attraction and expansion projects attracted some 2,400 job commitments, $254 million in investment. The average wage there on the rise as well. outpacing 2019 numbers. Also, the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore designated as a national park. Gary Chicago International Airport added a customs facility, expanded runway, and UPS facilities as well. In Hammond, Digital Crossroad, a $200 million data center. And for details on those developments and more, pleased to be joined by Northwest Indiana Forum CEO Heather Innes. Heather, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me, Gary.
Well, that's a lot that I mentioned off the top, but that really is kind of just peaking, the tip of the iceberg, if you will. Most recently, a $300 million casino, the Hard Rock Casino, Northern Indiana, opened there. That will continue to make Northwest Indiana really a destination when it comes to gaming and those folks attracted to that.
Outstanding. Absolutely, Gary. We've got Horseshoe Casino. We've got Blue Chip Casino. We've got Ameristar already operating in market. And so this just adds a labeled crown jewel in the already beautiful Northwest Indiana arena of casinos. So a huge opportunity for us. And we're so delighted to see the Hard Rock land here, especially with the venue for concerts and different opportunities there.
Yeah, and big investment, construction jobs, $300 million investment there. And as you look at Northwest Indiana as a destination, certainly the Dunes has always been a destination. But the recent, I guess it was 2019, the designation as a national park really put the region on the map in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. We can't thank Congressman Musclosky enough for his work to move that along. We've got beautiful 42 miles of beautiful coastline here in Northwest Indiana. So it really showcases really well as a national park now. People use that as a stamp in their passport of places they want to visit. And so we're really fortunate to be able to offer a national park experience here in Northwest Indiana.
Yeah, and in terms, there's so much we can talk about here, but in terms of transformational projects, projects that have been talked about for decades, the Westlake Corridor extension into Lake County, a billion-dollar project, that is underway, as well as the South Shore double tracking as well. Two major transportation projects that are going to impact Northwest Indiana to Chicago, travel time in-state as well, and it opens up investment opportunities.
Huge, huge potential. So these aren't just transportation projects. These are economic development projects. The transit development corridors around the double tracking in Westlake that the state legislature put into play are game-changing. I mean, they're really revolutionary, and places all over the country are looking at how we're doing things here in Northwest Indiana now. There's great opportunity for investment along those corridors and to really be able to capture the increment and continue the growth along those. So in addition to that, the fiber and infrastructure opportunities that those create build the way for a great technology corridor as well. So not only do you have that transportation infrastructure, but then you also have the other infrastructure that comes along with it and really can create a robust ecosystem for entrepreneurship.
Before we leave, have to have you mention, Heather, because I know a number of communities up there are investing in a big way in quality of life, quality of place projects. You're attracting a lot of folks, too, coming over from Illinois with the tax situation and other things in Illinois, actually getting new residents into Northwest Indiana.
Yeah, so we're seeing great things happening around quality of place, quality of life in the cities of Valparaiso and Crown Point and Whiting. Hammond is doing a walkable downtown. I mean, really, folks are coming to Northwest Indiana. We're continuously trying to build up our inventory because we can't keep it in stock. So the quality of life is so great here. And really, we had some folks move over here that were talking about, they moved from Naperville and they had relocated to Valparaiso. And they said during a pandemic, in the first 6 months of living in Northwest Indiana, they met more of their neighbors and made more friends than in the 6 years that they'd lived in Naperville. So, I think that and Illinois is a wonderful place as well. So I don't want it to be a zero sum game, but we are really fortunate to have friendly folks and great quality of life here.
Very good. Well, Heather, as you mentioned off camera, you said Northwest Indiana beginning to get its swagger back a bit. A lot of projects going on. Really appreciate the time, and we'll continue to follow the stories there.
Thanks so much, Gary. Have a wonderful day.
All right.
This is Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick speaking with Northwest Indiana Forum CEO Heather Innes. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today and for this week. Our thanks to former Post Tribune Porter County freelance reporter Amy LaValle and Post Tribune freelance reporter Carrie Napoleon for being with us on the program. And thank you for joining us. We'll be back with you on Monday.